Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, another hopefully very great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and questions that may have come into people's minds today in particular, although some people will be listening to the show at a different time than December 14, 2012. Nonetheless, today there was a very violent and terrible shooting in, I believe it's called Sandy Hook, Connecticut. And for that's in the United States. For those of you who, you know, are outside the United States, you probably don't know where Sandy Hook is. And so the point is that we have had a number of these kinds of things go on before. And it is something more endemic to the United States than it is to other places. And so it's something also for us to give some pause about. However, tonight's show is abating violence spiritually, which hopefully will provide a, we'll say, an answer, not the only answer, to trying to deal with issues of violence. Now, I think that it's important for me to be very straight with everybody about what I'm going to be covering, because some people might have been shocked by today's events and or have even been directly affected by it. And so in any case, for the most part, I'm going to be talking about the principles and, we'll say, general concepts about what violence is and how it can be stopped using the spiritual principles and concepts that are probably the most effective means of actually stopping violence. In addition, I'm going to briefly address what specifically the children that were killed today, about 20, at least that's the present number, of children that were killed, to give that information for those people who either need to hear about it or want to hear about it, or just the general listenership. If you don't like that part of what I'm going to be talking about, I'll be addressing it for about 5 minutes after at the end of this first section. And you don't have to listen. You know, nobody's forcing you to listen to anything I have to say about this. I realize some people are going to be more sensitive and possibly more emotional about this than I'm going to present it. Other people might be the opposite. They might say, well, why are you dealing with something that has to do with current events? Well, this is not a current event. This is an event that has deep roots going back in time and has a repetition to itself in some respects. It certainly involves issues that I've talked about in the past, which include evil and other factors. And for those of you who want to know more about those issues, you can look into the textbook I wrote, Life's Hidden Meaning, look under evil, also look into who and under what circumstances persons can best deal with those factors. I'll talk a bit about that in the show later on. Now, let me start by defining violence, because this in itself, just the definition, will clarify a lot of most people's confusion. I really believe that. So please, if this goes by too quickly for you, you can always go back and listen in a couple of days when the show is up, and you can get it again, because this is probably critical to understand. Spiritually and metaphysically, probably more metaphysics in this sense than spiritual, because this is really kind of a physics issue. Violence is the following definition. Now, this definition is a definition that I have created, but it is consistent with other, we'll say, definitions in the general philosophy of ageless wisdom and some other allied, we'll say, metaphysical explanations. Violence, as I define it in a metaphysical sense, is the lowering and or destruction or partial destruction of a major center and sense that is in a living being. Now, if it's a human being, we have seven senses. I know that's hard to understand. Most people think of five, but there's two that are senses of only spiritual things. And those senses, if they are diminished in a way in which, now this is very important, this is part of the definition, in a way in which the amount of diminishment cannot be compensated for by the remaining sense or senses, to the point where a person becomes less sensible, or putting it another way, less aware, less able to sense in general, causing and leading to oftentimes what we call mistakes, but it can also be terrible accidents and frighteningly, we'll say, more severe issues. If a person has that effect, then they've had the effect of violence on them. It's caused in a truly physical sense or physics sense by one energy going against another energy, and the way that it affects the other energy, that is the energy in this case that we're using to sense with, and the energy coming in that is information to the sense, both of are being adversely affected by the energy that is directed toward the person or towards the being. Could be animals. Animals can have violence against them, and even in plants, although a lot of people may not follow that completely. And so the violence affects the sense or senses, and if it diminishes them to the point where a person is now lost some significant amount of sense, then we say that they have had violence done upon them. However, this is a relative term. Now let me explain. I'm going to give you an example. Let's say you're a prize fighter. Okay? Whew. That's not my favorite sport, but I'm going to use that as an extreme example so that you can follow what I'm saying. And you're a prize fighter, and you go into the ring, and you're fighting another person as a matter of sport. Now, to me, that's not exactly a sport, but whatever you want to call it, that's the definition in our society, right? It is a sport to us for some reason. And even if you go back in antiquity, it was a sport in times as early as Greece and before. I mean, people have been doing this sort of stuff for a long time. Now, the point I'm trying to get at is if you've trained yourself to continue to sense by compensating with your other senses so that what would look like violence is being acted upon a center or sense within you, but if you compensate for the lack of it, until you lose that compensation, I guess until you're knocked out, one way to look at it, you're not a victim of violence. You're actually possibly a trained athlete or someone who is doing something for sport because it excites a person emotionally, and many people are excited emotionally, to lose some part of a sense that they compensate for. We actually find that exciting as human beings because it challenges our other senses. Now, there's a reason why it does that. In a spiritual sense, it does it because when we are ever challenged, we tend to grow more, and especially if we're challenged in a spiritual sense, because our spiritual senses are always involved in things, we grow that way as well. So you can grow in a physical way or a astral way or a mental way as far as senses are concerned, but you can also grow spiritually at the same time. So I'll give you an example. Go back to our boxer, say. The boxer has trained him or herself, and the result is that in most circumstances, the boxer maintains a level of sense able to compensate for the amount of what it is energy being applied against centers in that boxer's body or bodies, actually. And so the result is they experience not a loss of sense in overall, they experience a compensation and sometimes excitement. So they actually find it fun and joyful in some way to be put into this circumstance. And in a spiritual sense now, I'm not saying not all boxers are fighting for spiritual reasons, but in a spiritual sense, overcoming these losses and still having a sense of God also helps them to grow spiritually if that's what they seek to do. Now, I'm not saying it happens very often, but it does sometimes in some people. And generally in life, people follow the same thing. So if we're challenged by various quote-unquote potential violence in our life that we overcome by compensation with the other centers balancing and helping to abate the effects of the violence, then the result, or potential violence, then the result is we grow in a sense, both physically and if we were challenged astrally and or mentally, the same thing. And we can grow in the spiritual senses because if at the same time we're thinking about creating more light or trying to create more light with our senses and attempting to do so, even though we may be doing other activities, obviously boxing would be one of them, then we are growing spiritually as well. Wow. All that was a mouthful. And I realized that may go, I've gone so fast, some people go, oh, what is he talking about? All right, you'll get it eventually because I'm going to keep talking about other parts of this, so it will come together maybe, I hope. All right, so here we go. So we're talking about abating violence. We're not talking about eliminating violence. We're talking about abating the effects of violence, abating what would be a violent act to many people. So some people are going to be like the boxer. They're going to become more able to abate. Another thing that abates violence is going from the opposite direction. You remember I started from the physical and went to the spiritual, but you actually can go the opposite direction. That's a little more difficult. And so what you would do, a person in this case, animals, this is not going to hold true for because they don't have much spiritual sense. But people do. And so under our conscious control, we can consciously control our spiritual senses to the point when we are challenged, even though we may lose some physical, astral, or mental sense within ourselves, we by some force being applied against us. Rather than it becoming a true violence against us in a spiritual sense, we compensate first spiritually by looking at the situation and saying that this is, of course, a spiritual event, regardless of whether it's physical or otherwise. And the first thing that that person is choosing to do is to increase their level of giving and focusing on others' needs rather than their own, which is hard to do because your own senses are to some extent being lessened. And most people, as a personal defense, want to save themselves. But that is not necessarily the way it has to go. So if you start from the spiritual side, which is rare, and usually you have to do a thing called spiritual discipline to achieve this, you can actually rebalance your center strictly from the spiritual side. I'm not going to go into that. You can look in Chapter 12 of Life's Hidden Meaning and read some of the ways that that can be done. But you can do it. It's more difficult, and it requires a thing called spiritual discipline, not physical, astral, or mental body discipline. Now, that is a preferred way, in my opinion, because it leads to a much better overall outcome because you're starting with the more important thing first. But it isn't as fast. Spiritual change requires a greater level of time in most people until they reach what is called the middle or so, the midpoint or so, or sometimes just past the point where the renunciations are, and that can occur somewhat earlier, of the third initiation. So these advanced level people, initiates, of which there are not very many on the planet, can almost instantaneously, as fast as a great athlete, rebalance their centers spiritually. But for the rest of us, you know, the rest of the people on the planet, that may not be working for us, you know, and it's a difficult thing to achieve. All right, so can it be done? Yes, absolutely. But it's not really something that everybody's going to be great at. Now, if you are doing this, you'll know what I'm talking about, so I don't probably have to explain it too much. And if you're not doing it, you may not be able to yet. So even though it's a great idea, and you should certainly be informed of it, which I'm telling you, it isn't always successful. Now, for this very reason that I just explained, Only the most advanced spiritual people can completely or really fully deal with the basis or the main basis of severe violence, which has to do with evil. But we're going to get into that. We're going to deal with that. But because they can more or less instantaneously, no matter how fast the evil is trying to act in a violent way, these folks can do something quickly to deal with it. Whereas, even though someone's spiritually disciplining themselves, if they aren't at that super fast level, the evil will overtake them, and they won't succeed. And when I wrote about this in Licensed Meaning, that's not in Chapter 12, that's actually in an earlier chapter. But the point is that when I wrote about it, most people didn't understand what I wrote. They think I'm talking about something different than what I'm saying. But I'm trying to hopefully maybe correct that now that people do get what I'm talking about. So that's why you got to have more advanced spiritual people if they're running the show and dealing with large amounts of evil, big evil, we'll call it, you know, on a national level or something, like that, something huge, because it's so overwhelming and the time factor, you just don't have the time necessary to be able to deal with the kind of blitzkrieg that's a German way of posing war from World War II, a method of evoking an evil response. Okay, so here's the point. As far as most people, and even tonight's show is concerned, the spiritual side, while being the biggie, is probably not going to be the solution for places like the United States, where violence has become too much a way of life. So we're going to get into the other elements of it and see how it can be dealt with. Now, there is one way to try and deal with this on a national level, but that would involve what I wrote about, which is you would have to have people in special positions, like a spiritual oligarchy of sorts, not to have any superpowers of, dictatorial powers, but rather powers of education and letting other people, we'll say informing others of potential evils in individual situations and more likely in group circumstances that are serious and going to adversely affect large numbers of people, not necessarily anyone on a specific or individual level, but where it could grow beyond that. That sort of thing makes sense, and I fully support that. The chances of that happening anytime in the near future are very low, because that would mean that a lot of people would recognize the concepts I'm talking about tonight. Now, you could say, oh, well, look at all the people who are listening to you. Yeah, well, there's some people listening for sure, but it's nowhere near enough to be able to change that sort of thing on a national level. I'm not even sure in a small town could you change it in that respect. So here is the point. It's going to take time before some of the solutions that I'm going to propose tonight are really going to be possible. But others will eventually, over time, actually happen, in my opinion. It's assuming we as a world survive the problems that are taking place, as an example, here in the U.S. Okay. Let's move a bit further. Then, okay, so again, I'm going to restate, and I will a number of times throughout the show because this is such an important definition. Violence is a relative definition. It deals with the adverse effects from forces directed against the energies within a center or centers, and it causes enough disruption of the center's ability to sense and to process information as to lead the person in this case, or it could be a little reformed life too, lead the person into a position in which they are going to be much less sensible. They won't be able to sense as well in whatever body. It could be either the etheric, physical, the astral, or the mental body that occurs in. Oftentimes it's all three, by the way. And if it's physical violence, it has to involve physical senses. If it's astral violence, it most likely does not, more often than not, it involves just astral and sometimes mental senses. So it's not a physically violent act, but it's still a violent act. Because astrally, if the senses are disrupted, it's the same kind of thing. And as an example, if you, in a spiritual sense, which is the component of violence coming through the other senses, a person loses physically their ability to cooperate and share. In the astral sense, if there's astral violence, a person loses the ability to love. Okay? And if it's mental violence, then a person loses the ability to give wisely and to understand and create truth. So those are the things that go with the effects from a sense being acted upon with violence, and the person, therefore, meaning that the person also is unable to compensate for the violence. Okay, so that gives us some ideas right off the bat about what we're dealing with. Now, when someone is in a position where they experience violence, besides compensating, as I spoke earlier, with the spiritual senses, most people can and do, to some extent, attempt to compensate with the remaining senses, depending upon how many of their senses were debilitated in some fashion by the forces of the violence. Now, some people are better at doing this than others, and once a person becomes attuned how to abate violence, they usually can do so, if it's in the non-spiritual way, fairly quickly. And so they can compensate fairly quickly. Some amount of training of their senses is necessary to accomplish this effect. If a person has already been violated and they obviously didn't compensate for it, there is a model that I'm going to propose that can be used. Some of this model recently has gotten into treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder and other kinds of syndromes like that, but most of it has not. So let me try to just touch on it, and then we'll talk more about it later. And that is that in order to help somebody to do this, and we'll call it a kind of therapy, the person has to be subjected, unfortunately, to various modes of the violence in very minimal fashion, and also using techniques in psychotherapy that are called active psychotherapy. It includes things like gestalt, you may have heard that word, but there's many other kinds. And these kinds of therapy, some of them just deal with talking, like reality therapy and other things, but others even deal with actual physical things, like being hit with a pillow or something like that. Or sometimes a kind of rubber and foam paddle of some sort. These are, again, not meant to harm the person in a sense, but to directly affect some aspect of the physical nature, even though it's not meant to be as harmful as a real kind of weapon. And in other cases, it can be literally just pushing. In other words, someone pushing or someone blocking someone from being able to move in a certain way. There's lots of things you can do, but all of these involve an active psychotherapy. In some cases, they involve psychodrama, which is where others are involved. There's an interactive mode, and it also includes the astral and certainly mental bodies as well. Most of these psychotherapies always have some element of astral and mental factors to them. And they're involved for training purposes to get a person over the point where their ability to balance their centers finally abates the effects of what they're perceiving and usually is violence in force against them in some fashion. It could be anything, really. Now, sometimes the violence lives in the memory of the person, and it is not part of the environment that they're in at the moment. But the memory is reenacted, and the center can respond. Even the physical center can respond just as if it was actually being affected by real force coming from outside. But the force is actually created from inside the person's own body. And that sounds strange, doesn't it? Why would somebody create a force inside their own body to upset their physical, astral, and or mental senses? How come they would do such a nutty thing? And the reason is because the person is so afraid of it happening again, they're trying to do psychotherapy on themselves unsuccessfully. And we call this usually post-traumatic stress disorder, but there's many other kinds of conditions that are similar to that that have the same, very much the same problem. Why would we want to do therapy on ourselves? Because we're trying to correct the problem. It's not that we're trying to make it worse. We're trying to find a solution, but the person isn't skilled enough to find the solution for themselves, and so they become, in a sort of neurotic way, going back over the same thoughts, the same feelings, and actually creating physical symptoms, just as if the physical thing, if it was a physical thing, happened all over again. Isn't that weird? Yeah, and it's for real. This is not, I'm speaking as a psychotherapist now. This thing happens all the time. How do I know this? Well, back in the 70s and early to mid 80s, I was practicing as a psychotherapist. I saw a lot of people. And I also directed mental health institutes where many more people saw other people as well, and I was involved in some of their treatments just from a, standing back standpoint, but we would go over our cases sometimes together. And the result is that you have an amazing, we'll say, syndrome that really has yet to be fully explained. What I just told you in the last couple of minutes about this is I've never read about it in the way I explained it. But for a very long time, I taught it that way myself, and I was going to actually write a book on it at one point, and I decided at that very point in my life that I was going to instead switch my life to be doing what I'm doing right now. So I didn't do that, and I regret that to some extent, because I always thought somebody else would write it, but they haven't completely explained it yet from everything I've read. Now, maybe there's a book. There's a lot of books I haven't read, especially in this field, because I long ago left it. So the point is that could it be that there's an explanation there and I don't know about it? Yeah, it could very well be. So if you know of such a source, let me know, because I don't know about it. I just assume it still hasn't been, because I talked to so many individual practitioners over time, and none of them seem to have read about it. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't some book sitting on someone's shelf that nobody else has read, but you know, that sort of thing goes on all the time. Or very few people have read, so it just hasn't gotten, the message hasn't gotten out there. It takes a long time in professional media to get stuff, really, we'll say, sunken in so that people accept it, and they test it out themselves, and they say, yeah, that's true. It takes a while. You know, people, if they're practitioners, they need to see it working to know that it's for real. They'll read about it, and other people say it works, but we got to really try yourself. All right, so that being the case, now you can see how this definition that I'm explaining now came to be developed a long time ago, before I was really metaphysical, spiritual, any of that stuff. I kind of had this working model, you could call it. I didn't understand astral bodies or mental bodies, but I understood that people had emotions and that I had thoughts, mental thoughts, and I could see that all that was being connected together, and that it was a mind-body connection for sure, and that the mind was definitely involved in it. And so there's all kinds of other therapies, NLP and others, that deal with some ways that people think. But the most important element appears to be that we want to get better. There's a part of us that almost fanatically will keep trying to relieve the fears that we have of a future event recurring, or something similar to what was so terrible for us. And this brings about our own, we'll call it self-violent issues. All right, that being the case, we've covered that now, and you can deal with that through proper psychotherapy, although you may need a copy of this show to bring with you to your therapist, because that too many of them may even understand what you're explaining to them. And I guess you could have them try to call me. I always try to be available, and that's what it's going to take. I'll do it. But the point is that the show is available, too. And so that's a way of maybe getting the message across. If you're in therapy and things haven't been working quite for you, and you have a problem of this nature, think about bringing this to the attention of the doctor you're seeing, because you can get that person maybe to help you if they understand how to do that, and maybe help a lot of other people, because once this is known, it can be quite effective. All right, so how else can we abate then, besides just going to see a shrink to have your mind dealt with in your other body? How else can you deal with this? Well, in a spiritual sense, abating violence in a bigger way needs to be addressed by the group processes involved. And we're going to get more into that in the next segment. But for right now, I'm going to do that thing I talked about, which is to describe what children, particularly under about the age of 10 or so, experience, and as they get younger, almost all of them do, when their life is suddenly cut short, and particularly in a grueling and violent way, which would certainly, I think, apply to today's situation. So, if you don't want to hear this, I'm going to go till we have the commercial, which is going to be about 5 minutes or so from right now. And then a couple of minutes after that, and you can come back and join us if you would like to. And if you want to hear this, then fine, I'm going to go over it. There's nothing terrible about what I'm going to talk about, but some people may be just so sensitive to this thing at this moment that they don't want to hear it. So that's all right. All right, so let me go on and talk about this. Most of us, when we die, experience some information, I'll call it communication, with our solar angel. Before the death and soon after. Before may only be seconds, minutes, hours. Other people could be days or weeks or more. And depending upon how fast the death is moving on us. And the level of communication is based upon the needs that we have for dealing with the death. A lot of people have great fears, and the fears are lessened by a being we can call Solar Angel. Today, probably the best word many people use is guardian angel. But this angel is a being of enlightenment or light, and it's far beyond us in, we'll call it spiritual development. It lives in a small part in the higher mental realm, where, but most of its existence is higher than that. And so it can communicate with us through our mind, our mental body, and especially our higher mind. But we are fooled by this because we don't know what that means. So whatever communication we have, sometimes we will even believe it's right there in the room with us, or we're hearing things in our head, or whatever it may be. But it's not so much that as we're hearing communication through our mental senses and through the senses correspondingly stimulated by the mental senses in the lower bodies, but not the angel is not there, actually. But we would swear it is. So, for all intents and purposes, I guess it doesn't matter if we think it's there because it's still communicating. Remember, communication isn't us being told or forced to think a certain way. We are still the thinker. This great being gives us information, which is always helpful, I mean, because the being is not going to try to give us bad information. And its information almost is infallible. So whatever we get from it, we can conclude it's as good as we're going to get it. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but it's pretty close. By our standards, probably it's perfect, because we wouldn't understand the imperfection in it if we could try. Couldn't do it. All right, so what is then the role? The role is to alleviate fear. That's number one. Number two, to give us the maximum opportunity to get the most meaning and least amount of destruction or non-meaningfulness from the experience of death, okay? And to provide what many people would consider a sense of security, not just emotionally, but in whatever sense that relies on the body that we are operating from. And so that could include various things that goes on to, oh, who knows? It could be anything you might want it to be. Now, in the case of a child, what this means is that, in a young child, that the angel does not act at all the way it acts with other people or beings. You know? What it does, basically, is it very quickly removes the child from the scene of where whatever violence was acted upon in its death, if it's a violent death. If it's the child's dying of a disease, it informs the child ahead of time of what is going to be encountered, but it also removes it from the scene very quickly, which it doesn't do with adults. And in removing it from the scene, it does not allow the child usually to stay in the etheric world, unless there are exceptions to this rule, which there are some, but most of the time, it takes the child directly, and it accompanies it, at least in the child's mind, it does, into the astral world almost immediately. Children who die of violence are seldom left in the etheric world for minutes, days, hours, whatever. They're almost immediately taken into the astral world. The angel simultaneously contacts a number of astral residents who are seeking, through love, desire to have a child. And this is the only way they can have children, is to adopt them from this world, from the physical. And usually more than one may respond. And then the angel is directly involved in helping the child to decide what is best for it in terms of getting its new parents in the astral world. Kind of a totally different kind of experience than what we would expect. And the child is almost always given a sense of security, and it is allowed to mourn as much as it seeks to mourn its losses in the in the astral world, but only after it has a new set of parents, which is a little strange for us to understand. But it's needed because when it does, it is given then the ability to see some things going on in the physical world from a great distance. That only takes place after it's being cared for by new parents. And this could take a little bit of time. So mourning in itself can sometimes be, delayed. And the violence that occurred in the physical world caused death, and we'll talk about that for a very distinct reason. And I'm going to go to break now, but when we come back, we will talk a bit more about this and how violence causes death and some other things about it. We will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about abating violence spiritually. That's tonight's show topic. And I did describe briefly what a young child usually experiences, which is considerably different than adults or even older children experience if they have a sudden, particularly violent death. Children that are sick may not experience the same issue if they die or a protracted period of time. It depends on the circumstances. Now, let's talk about what death actually is so that we can understand what a violent death is. Death is caused by one or more centers completely dissociating. A major center is what I'm talking about, and a major sense, in effect. When a spiritual center, which we call a chakra, stops functioning as it is designed to, which is in human beings, it is to bring in information And that information is then received by the consciousness or self of the person, and at the same time it is transferred to the, in most cases it goes to the self, and then it's transferred to the personality for its, we'll say, decision about how to deal with the information. Personality, looking at it from that standpoint, we'll call the personality the subconscious. So you can get information subconsciously and you get it consciously. If the information is separated from the consciousness completely, from the self, in other words, then the person is dead. Okay, so once you have one or more centers that no longer is receiving any information, that person cannot maintain life in that body. A lot of people are going to say, well, isn't a center and a sense all connected to an organ? You can lose organs all the time. Yes, you can lose organs, and theoretically you can go on living without necessarily having a certain organ, although the major organs that are connected to the centers, it's very difficult to stay alive. You could, in some circumstances, particularly with modern science. But I'm not talking about an organ. I'm not talking about the question of receiving the information from other organs to compensate. I'm saying if there is zero information going into the consciousness, at that particular time, that center has another kind of connection, we'll call it, and that's with the life thread. And when the consciousness is completely dissociated, the we'll call it the person no longer can maintain the vibration necessary to control the life thread. So it's a totally spiritual kind of event rather than a physiological one, as organs would presume. It's something on the order of saying when a person loses one of their centers completely, they no longer are a human. And for the protection of that person and others, human beings that lose humanness die. If that didn't happen, we would be literally inundated by, you got it, zombies. Yeah, seeing that is the phenomenon of the day, I guess, that so many people are interested in zombies is not possible because of metaphysical and spiritual principles. But the reason it isn't possible isn't because of some physical reason. It's really because of a metaphysical one and a spiritual. Metaphysical means beyond the present physical knowledge. And a spiritual one. That we're designed so that we don't stay in that body. Now, this gets to the physical. You can stay in the etheric part of the physical for a long time, up to a long time, but you will start losing consciousness to that body. But that seeps out slowly. It can take 100, 110, 120 years. And then you're a ghost by then. A ghost just means you don't have enough consciousness to know who you are, but you have enough to stay, quote-unquote, alive, so to speak. Now, here's the craziness of this whole phenomenon, is that when we have a violent death outside of the youngest people that this occurs to, humans are in etheric form for protracted periods of time, usually. Most want to, we'll say, have closure. They want to resolve what was left undone. And they may even have certain levels of anger and even want to do violence to others. So it's a kind of crazy effect that violence leads to, we'll say, unusually long experiences in the etheric world for most people that it's enacted on. But for those under 10, especially like 5, 6, 7 years old, those luckily are protected from all that by being taken on to the next world. Now, there are rare exceptions, especially if the child was violently beaten for years of its life or something, that will cause that child to potentially become a ghost if it dies through violence. But if that isn't the case, and it's just sudden, out of no place, luckily they're protected. Now, here's the point that I'm getting at. We have different circumstances in metaphysics based upon what the issues are of the type of violence being imposed on people. And it's not cut and fast and cut and hard. It's really just a relative issue. Even though you can, in general, make statements about what, how, if it happened a certain way, this is likely what's going to occur. All right. So most people, if they die violently, especially if they're adults, are going to spend more time, probably etherically. They may have contact with their guardian angel or solar angel. And during that time, there's going to be, we'll say, a kind of therapy, if you want to call it that, in an etheric sense, between oftentimes the angel and sometimes between a master of the angel's wisdom, which is unusual, but it happens, and sometimes between others that also recently died in the etheric world. It's very strange. I know, an etheric group psychotherapy session. I have never seen one, but I imagine they could take place. At any rate, all of this is happening because the person's going to be around for weeks, possibly, in the etheric world, resolving some of their life issues, trying to get a handle on the issues, and also trying to restore as much as they can, at least in an etheric sense, of their senses, their physical, or we'll call it etheric senses, what's left of them and how to make it so that they can recover some part of it if possible. Now, you might say, why do you want to recover some part of your etheric sense if you're going on to live in the astral world? Well, actually, there's a benefit to that. If you can recover some part of it, you can actually bring that part into play, and you can make it so that, in a sense, you will become more one with your etheric, with your astral senses. That etheric part is enlightened. So actually, if you do some good things while you're etherically still alive, and if your focus is more out, you can actually benefit yourself once you go to the astral world, and even to the mental world. So there are some benefits to this, and that's, it's not being done in some idle way for silliness' sake. It's being done for real practical reasons. And that's why the guardian or solar angel does get involved in this and encourages people to. And why sometimes the master of the angel's wisdom might get involved, particularly if it's a spiritual disciple sort of relationship. Or sometimes you find just good people that are etherically, most of them are dead, obviously, physically, around who might be of some help before they move on. It's really interesting. And yes, there are the very, very rare exceptions of people who are having etheric out-of-body experiences, and they may even find an opportunity or so to go ahead and do something that is helpful. Not to say that all people are in that space, but there's enough of them around that it could happen. And it does happen. All right, so the violence, again, is looked upon as something that is abated, not something that is avoided. Why can you not avoid violence? Why can't we just make the whole world a non-violent place of some sort? And this gets into the progression of a thing called evil. And evil's methodology involves a force to be applied on its victims to gain power over the victims, and part of the power comes from, we'll say, dissociation, destruction, imbalancing of the person's centers. This is how it's done. And violence is the word that does it. That's the word you use to describe describe evil doing it. Not all violence is evil, but all evil uses violence in some circumstances. So violence is a primary evil thing. Now, Earth, planet we're on, right now is not a sacred planet, meaning that evil is part of our system. Worse yet, Earth is doing an experiment to see if humans can somehow get rid of evil on their own rather than using a more protracted and slow method, which eventually gets rid of evil and even prevents it from getting as bad as it has. But on Earth, that's been done away with. So we're all guinea pigs in a grand experiment that we have chosen to participate in, our souls have, in which we're seeing whether human beings, on their own, can get rid of evil. Like, you can't get rid of evil by getting rid of violence. And this is the part that's so hard to understand for so many people. You can only damage evil or prevent it from growing by abating violence. If you try to get rid of violence, you will get rid of freedom. And that's what evil is counting on. Okay? You have to, the only way to get rid of violence, in a true sense, is to virtually imprison people, and in certain ways, that prevents them from effectively being violent on one another. It can be done, and has been done in various societies from time to time, but it virtually eliminates freedom, and it makes the whole society sort of martial law or worse. And the bottom line is that when you do that, evil grows by leaps and bounds. People, with the thing, the way, the surest way, there's two ways, to get rid of evil, to have evil grow. And the first is to eliminate freedom or to restrict it in significant ways. And the second is to get rid of love, or wise love, I should say, of wisdom. And evil is good at trying to get people to stop doing that by making them more selfish and trying to get something for nothing, et cetera, all that kind of stuff we've talked about many times in the show. So between the two, trying to get rid of violence through martial law, et cetera, is a horrible thing if it doesn't work. Or trying to get rid of violence by giving everybody everything they desire, so in some way they won't be as violent or they will stop being violent, doesn't work either, because that's unwise giving, and it makes people more and more selfish, which causes evil to grow as well. So you just can't get rid of violence. It just doesn't work. The only thing you can do is a system of abating violence by having people change the way that their consciousness is interacting with their major centers, because that's part of the center. A major center, by definition, is a center with consciousness. There's only seven. And so that's the bottom line. It just doesn't work any other way. Now, why is it such a big deal? Why is evil the whole ballgame? Well, it isn't. I mean, violence doesn't have to come from evil. But it doesn't matter. If you try to get rid of violence, whether you're just dealing with evil or not, there is no way around it. Evil grows. You can't get rid of it. Oh, that sounds pretty disheartening to some people. I'm well aware of that. But and some people say, well, let's get rid of weapons, especially these guns. Okay. Well, yes, a gun is a convenient weapon. It can provide a more sure way to cause death than some other means, but not certainly the most sure way of killing someone. But the important point here is that it's so many steps beyond the question, and it involves so many other issues of potential freedoms, at least here in the United States, and also it has with it a false premise. What is the false premise? That in some way, the means of causing harm does away with the main cause of severe violence, which is evil. And that certainly isn't true at all. It's a kind of strange thing. Now, how do we know that this is a true statement of what I said? Well, if you look at some countries, and I'm going to name a few. In Switzerland, everybody has to own a gun. You may not know that, but it's a fact. You have to own a gun. And in Israel, almost everybody does have a gun. Now, there's a few people who don't, but almost everybody does. Okay, so we can look at these societies and say, well, how violent are they? Well, they're only a fraction of the violence in terms of use of guns than the United States. So it must not be the guns that's causing this. The guns must not be the cause. There's some other cause, because you wouldn't have, that's called a null hypothesis, you wouldn't have that going on then. It couldn't happen. You have a contradiction. And so basically, the only way you could really resolve this is to look at it from a different standpoint, that there's another cause in places like the United States. And the cause is that evil has almost, we'll say, three-fourths or more of its efforts focused on the United States. See, this is something that's hard to understand again. It's evil is not some kind of just, mechanical thing. It's a force created by people. People who have rejected the authority, we'll call it, and the power of God. They want to be more powerful than God. They want to have all the power possible. And they seek it at the cost of other people, because that's how evil works. It is a, we'll call it, I guess the best way to describe it is, this may not sound right, but that evil effectively is there to destroy humans so that the people who are humans and evil will have more power and control over not only other humans, but effectively, eventually, over God itself. Now, those who understand God know that that's absolutely not possible, but it doesn't matter, because if you're evil, you believe this to be true. And, of course, evil also exclaims there is no God, because that also helps it in its desire to be destructive to God. And God, and to God, life is God's growth, and human life is the first type of life that can understand its own creator. So, I mean, that's a big deal. So evil comes from humanity, and, I mean, lower life forms can be made somewhat evil, but they don't, it doesn't, it is not its originating source. And so we could say that evil definitely is human in its progenitor role. And the main focus, we'll call it, of where evil is moving towards, as far as the United States is concerned, is to cause the United States to lose freedom and wise-giving. And once it accomplishes that, the United States will be like a lot of other countries already have somewhat become, or are already become, and that is a bastion for more evil. And you could say, well, that kind of is contradictory, because the United States is fighting evil and it's such a good place because it has freedom and love wisdom already. How come evil can exist here at all? And the reason is that the love wisdom does not balance the freedom in the United States one way or another. In some areas, it's too much love wisdom, not enough freedom. In other areas, it's too much freedom, not enough love wisdom to balance it. And in addition, neither are at high enough levels in the existing society. Now, this is true only for the last 35 years or so, actually, not 35 years, that this is true of. But it's a strange thing, a strange situation, So we're a leading country, yes, but we're falling behind in a sense from our leading position because evil is on the rise and is winning in its violent attitude. Therefore, we would expect, and this is what's happening, we are having more and more violent acts in general because there's more darkness that leads to evil around us. Whoa. That's kind of scary. Well, listen, I want you to ponder on that. I'm going to do a brief commercial here, so to speak, for some interesting people. ActiveForever.com. They've got some local showrooms over in Scottsdale. It's over at 10,799 North 90th Street. It's very far up north from where I am, but it's not far for some people. And that's how far north they are, and they're at 9299 West Olive Avenue, Suite 604. Okay, what am I telling you about? What are they doing that's Active Forever? Well, they sell some things that makes life easier for people who find some activities difficult to do. You may have a disability. That's a good place to go to if you need any help with that. But you may just find that it's easier to do certain things with some of the products they sell. As an example, I'm sitting on one of their cushions as I talk to you right now. And I can tell you, it's the greatest cushion I've ever sat on. How do you like that? Now, that may not be a great picture, but the point is that I'm giving you some reality here. They do sell things like that, and they're inexpensive for what they do. The thing I'm sitting on right now is selling for about $23. And so it's a really good, we'll say, improvement from other, we'll say, options. And Patrick is the fellow I spoke to at this particular location. They've got several others around the valley. And you can go online if you're not in the Phoenix area. Patrick Bures, sometimes called Mr. Awesome. I know, he's learning humility the strange way. But you can get a hold of them at 800-377-8033 or 480-767-6800 if you're local. And you can call them, and they're open Fridays from 7 a.m. to 5:30, Monday through Fridays, 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And check it out. It's an interesting place. I went there, and I said, wow, this stuff could be helpful for my doing this show as long as I've been doing them these days. And so if you think that's the case, give them a call. All right, so now back to what I was saying. This is kind of an interesting show to be dealing with this other thing. And that is that evil is attempting, if you want to call it that, to effectively destroy all of the parts of what it is for the United States to become an enlightened country. We have never achieved enlightenment except from the forefounders, you know, the fathers, founding fathers. That was an enlightened group of folks. But we really haven't achieved enlightenment in the United States. But we have done one important thing. We have led the world into light from a darker place. We're not doing that now. And so we're in a dangerous position because we're kind of undoing what we've done before, and that leaves us much more open to violence. Our family structure has been eroded because of selfishness. So the lack of giving wisely is upon us, and it's been replaced with materials. So instead of families operating on giving wisdom and helping their children become wise givers, they're making them into selfish youngsters by giving them things, especially when they aren't responsible for getting them themselves or they aren't living up to a standard of virtue high enough to be given anything to outside of teaching and some level of restriction from behaviors which may not be enlightened. Now, that's supposed to be teachers, teachers of the values of life. That is diminished tremendously in our family structure. And it's diminished partly because we adults, some of us, a large proportion of us, are takers rather than givers and are more interested in getting something for nothing so than our children are. If children learn what they live, not what they're taught per se, other than what they're taught through their parents living it. So when I say teach, I don't mean you sit down with your kids and give them a lecture. I'm talking about teaching through example and teaching through explaining the example after you show the example. So you can teach in that way. That makes sense. But not until you do the example can you be an effective teacher of it. Okay. And that's a big problem, and it's probably the single biggest one in terms of where we're moving backwards in. There's many other areas I've talked about in the past, but I'm not going to go through all those today because I'm going to stick with the idea of how to specifically abate violence rather than just deal with all the reasons for its existence. You see, one of the factors here is that if we are going to abate violence, we need to do it in two different ways, individually and in a group way. And the two ways are not the same, and they're not always even complementary to each other, although most of the time they are. So this is a bigger picture today than just trying to deal with, well, you know, let's all do these 10 things and we'll maybe get better. I think we need to have a bigger picture because what's wrong is big. It's the big picture itself is wrong. And so trying to deal with it from these little slices will probably only give people a false sense that this can actually be dealt with that way, and I don't think it can. So the first issue in the big sense is to recognize that the primary cause of violence is evil. Now, that doesn't mean that all people who are violent are evil. As a matter of fact, the majority are not. The vast majority are not. But the primary cause of them being violent is. Because when people are violent in ways that isn't because they are evil, it's usually because one of two things have gone wrong in their life. Either they have had employed in their exchanges with other people a lack of love wisdom coming from them, but most likely also being, we'll say, extolled or in some way directed from the other people. And in addition, they've also experienced, with or without the question of love wisdom, a curtailment in a freedom that is in some way a, we'll say, threat to who they are in terms of self. Who they are in terms of self. Now, you could say, well, what about all the people who have the mental problems in this and that? Well, even people who are mentally ill still respond with violence from these two factors. And they tend not to respond with violence when the two factors aren't absent. I know that sounds so strange, because our society tries to promulgate the other idea that, well, if they're mentally ill, it's just part of being mentally ill. Well, I was around a lot of mentally ill people, more than most people ever are going to be around. And I can tell you the violent ones were doing violence mostly still for the same reasons that I'm talking about. Now, is that because they are irrational and misunderstanding the perception of what's going on? Yes. Sometimes that is true. If a person hallucination has experiences that are not based on reality, that can be part of the reason that they are acting the way they're acting. But to their perception, they're still reacting to not being wisely loved, and or not being allowed to wisely love, and or not being allowed to be free, and or not being allowed to experience the freedom of others. So you get into these kinds of things in which you say, wow, this becomes a strange epidemic kind of thing. And now you can see why I say it's the imbalance in the United States. Even though we're higher on both of those, we have more freedom, we have more love, wisdom than most of the countries, but because we have such imbalances in this, it still creates a violent society. And because the balance is worse in the United States than most other countries, those countries that have less freedom and less love, wisdom, but they're in better balance, have less violence. Even among the mentally ill, that is true. Okay, so does that mean that because a person is mentally ill and they perceive a non-truth about their world, are they responsible for the violence that they have? Well, according to the laws that we believe we have, but not necessarily the verdicts of juries, the answer is they're not responsible because they can't tell the difference between right and wrong, not because they don't understand the concept of right and wrong, which is unfortunately the way the law sees it. That's a wrong law, by the way. But the reason they truly can't is because their perceptions are so distorted. Even though they could give you a lecture for an hour on what right and wrong is, they cannot perceive it correctly. That is the correct way the law was originally meant to be, and it got twisted by legal methods to mean something entirely different. Now, if we adhere to that definition, we would be able to fairly quickly determine by examinations and other things.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Okay, we- we are having technical difficulties, and unfortunately, because of equipment problems on my end, I'm going to have to get off the air because I'm causing problems for both the radio station and for our listeners and some things. So it's been a great show. Unfortunately, it's not going to have time. And maybe we'll continue with this subject next week, but we'll see. Okay, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.